This is the Music Publishing Podcast with your host, Dennis Tobenski. Join Dennis in his weekly nuts and bolts conversations with composers, performers, and other arts professionals as they navigate their careers as concert musicians in the 21st century. And now your host, Dennis Tobenski.
Hello, and welcome to the Music Publishing Podcast. I'm joined today by composer and conductor Joshua Gerson. Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dennis. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
I'm glad we could make this happen. So why don't you take a couple of minutes and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, and a bit about the organization that you work with.
Sure. Well, currently I am the music director of the New York Youth Symphony, as well as the assistant conductor of the New York Philharmonic. Mm-hmm. And I actually do have a background both in composition and conducting. I did my undergraduate work in composition at NEC, the New England Conservatory. And then I went on to the Curtis Institute and got my conducting degree there. And since then, I had a fellowship down in Miami at the New World Symphony, where I was assistant to Michael Pilson Thomas for 3 years and worked down there with the orchestra.
Nice.
And since after that, I moved up to New York, and I've been doing the Youth Symphony and been working with the Philharmonic for the past two seasons up here in the city.
Cool. So did your conducting and composing sort of, did one come out of the other, or were they sort of both always there?
Well, I think I did. I was a little bit probably than that. I always really wanted to be a conductor ever since I was very, very young, 4, 5, 6 years old, which is pretty abnormal. And usually you fall into conducting later on, as you sort of develop as a musician, you start an instrument, you some kind of fall into it somehow. But I always really wanted to be a conductor. But it's very hard to go to school as an undergrad and get a bachelor's degree in conducting. There aren't a lot of places that really give you a real legitimate degree as an undergrad. And I had been composing more sort of, I wouldn't say as a hobby, but less seriously as I was growing up through high school. I'd had some pieces performed. And so I felt like it was a good thing to do. In the meantime, in the 4 years I had before I could then go to grad school and get a conducting degree, I sort of figured it'd be a good way to sort of learn some different skills and learn what I needed to help me later on. So I decided to go to school as a composer first. And I'm very glad that I did, because I learned a lot that I think really did help me in many, many ways going forward in my career.
Yeah. Are you still active now as a composer?
I'm sad to say that it's been a while since I've written anything. A combination of me being a little busier with the conducting work and quite frankly, I think we all are aware that composition is difficult and it takes a lot of time. And I've just sort of felt now that I sort of need to, if I'm going to start doing it again, I need to sort of reinvent myself some way and sort of find a new voice. And I just haven't really had the time to sit down and really devote the time that it takes to do that. But I really do hope to do it someday and hopefully sometime sooner than later.
Yeah, really. those are muscles that you like to.
Yeah. It's like in practicing an instrument, you really do. You lose your chops a little bit if you don't keep it up. So I'd like to build that back up at some point for sure.
Yeah. So with the New York Youth Symphony, can you tell us a little bit about the organization and what you guys do?
Sure. We really are one of the premier youth symphonies in the country. We have students that range in age from 12 to 22, so it's quite a big spread. This means we do include a lot of undergraduates in the New York area. So we have high school students from the Tri-State area, but we also have undergrads at Juilliard and Manhattan School of Music and NYU and schools in New Jersey and Connecticut and all over the place. So it really is a very diverse mix of students, and we really do try and cover as much a range of repertoire as we can, including a lot of sort of the classical pieces that you'll see. But we also do have a wonderful new music program for young composers. We have basically a competition every year. We encourage young composers to apply, and we choose three based on works they submit to commission new pieces for our concerts. So every season on all three of our concerts, we have a brand new world premiere of a work by a young composer.
Nice. I'm curious to know, we probably talk about this particular program a little bit more. Actually, let's not talk about that program quite yet.
Okay.
I do want to talk about it. Don't need to like jump right at certain things.
The heart of the matter. Yeah,
I know. Yeah.
we'll ease everybody into it.
Yeah. Hold off a little bit. So your programming is a balance of newer and newer works and standard rep.
Yes. And, you know, I think the real unique challenge in programming for a youth orchestra as, you know, compared to a regular professional orchestra is that, you know, I think in most professional settings, you're programming more for your audience. You're trying to find a collection of pieces that you think would be appropriate in some way for an audience to come listen to in succession, or, you know, pieces that you want to introduce the public to in some way. And with the youth orchestra, you really are programming more for the students than you are the audience.
Yeah.
You're trying to find pieces that you feel, that the students should be exposed to or aware of, or that would be good sort of tools, vehicles to teach them the concepts you're really hoping to teach them. So, you know, my goal as far as programming has been for the Youth Symphony has been really to try and find as diverse sort of a collection of repertoire in each season that I can, sort of finding, you know, a little bit of different composers from different eras and different cultures and, you know, different styles. So to expose whoever may be in the orchestra in a given season to as much different sort of style of music as I possibly can. You know, I think the one real tricky spot that I've sort of encountered, because we have this, again, I don't want to go right into it, but our commissioning program, when we have a new brand new world premiere on every concert by a student composer, it has been more difficult for me to find ways of programming pieces by other contemporary, more established contemporary composers.
Yeah.
To put sort of in conjunction with those commission pieces, you know, mainly because, you know, I think I need to be careful not to sort of overload a certain program with too much contemporary music and, you know, compared to getting some standard rip on there as well. But, you know, I also feel like I wouldn't want to overshadow a premiere by a student composer by putting a piece by S. Pekka Salonen on the same program or something like that. You kind of want to give the younger composers a chance to shine a little bit, so you need to be careful about that. But you know, I do really have, my goal has been to try and get sort of as diverse as possible, a series of pieces for the students to be exposed to, every year.
Yeah. It seems like, especially with programming more of the standard rep, it's important to get those things in their, you know, in their hands and their bodies, because it's, you know, I'm assuming that the idea is a lot of these players will go on to join other orchestras.
Right. And while your standard, you know, audience, the New York Philharmonic, has heard the Brahms, Beethoven symphonies and all that many times, you know, probably are very familiar with them, you know, a lot of the students haven't. And I feel like it's really, you know, our responsibility as educators in this level to make sure that they are aware of those standard repertory pieces, and they are, you know, and they do learn about them before they go on and do whatever they do. So it is sort of important to get that balance for the students as much as, you know, anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's an important aspect of what you guys and what youth orchestras are about. Do you know what the sort of, the typical path for one of your students is, you know, after being with you for a while, is it typically that these students go on to, you know, if they're not, you know, like the Juilliard students, if they're, you know, younger, if they go on to study more, or is it more of a, this is something that I'm doing and, you know, I may not continue?
I think it really has varied over the years, and I think it's actually it speaks volumes to sort of how beneficial the program can be sort of to any student, no matter what they end up going on to do. I mean, we've certainly had some students very, very serious about what they're doing to go on, you know, that have graduated high school, that have been in our orchestra and have gone on, you know, to study music in conservatories, very, very good conservatories. We've had other students that have graduated and have gone to college and certainly kept playing their instruments, but haven't necessarily majored in music, or maybe they've double majored with music and something else. And we've had other students that, you know, really have decided to want to focus on other things once they've graduated. But, you know, I think, because I hope that, you know, being in a youth orchestra, you learn many different things. It's not necessarily just about music making, but just sort of ensemble skills, collaborative skills, things that you can certainly apply to, you know, other facets of your life going forward, and you know, hopefully they can take what they've learned while they're with us and apply it to whatever they end up going on to do, whether it's music or something else.
Nice. How does the New York ensemble, I would say, you know, compared in terms of mission and you know, maybe programming, if this is something that you're you know about with other ensembles of its kind, like, you know, Chicago or, you know, another city that has an orchestra, you know, for a youth orchestra?
You know, I think in general, I suppose I don't want to speak for any other organization, but sort of just looking at the program and seeing what other youth orchestras are doing, I think we all generally have the same sort of goals and mission. I think we are, you know, all trying to expose our students to as much repertoire and important repertoire as we can. Mm-hmm. I will say that, again, the very unique thing about, you know, our program is the fact that we are featuring these young composers and these commissions on so many of our concerts. I do think that is something that does separate us a little bit from other youth orchestras in the country. I'm sure other youth orchestras have presentations of student compositions at some point, but I can guarantee you that they don't have it on every concert like we do.
Nice. So how does this competition work for you guys? What's the what are the parameters and the process?
Oh, basically, I believe the age limit is 30, so it's a little bit older than the students actually in the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Anybody under the age of 30 is can apply from anywhere in the world. You don't have to be a resident of the New York area. You can apply from anywhere, and we ask that you send in really a 5-minute excerpt of any piece that you've written with the recording. It can be for orchestra, it can be for anything else. Mm-hmm. We also ask that you submit the entire piece as well. We can only guarantee that we'll be able to look at the 5-minute excerpt. If we're curious and we want to look at more, we do. And that's why we ask for it to be there. Yeah. And as of right now, the process is totally done anonymously. So we have no idea who you are when we're judging the work. Mm-hmm. And we choose 3 composers just clearly based on what we see with the submissions, and then find out afterwards who they are, you know, where they come from, how old they are, you know, what their background is, everything. And this has actually been a discussion we've been having as far as, you know, the most appropriate and fairest way to do this. I've always really advocated that I think it's best that we do, judge students just based on the work, and that we don't really put any other factors into it. And that way we really are being as fair as we can about, you know, just the quality of the work you're submitting, and nothing else. You know, there has been a little bit of pressure on us to sort of think more about sort of how diverse a pool of composers we are, accepting and presenting. And that certainly is an issue that we've been addressing, and we're trying to find ways of sort of getting around that. But I really do feel like it's been a real, high sort of point of the program that we really are just judging composers based on what they submit and by nothing else.
Nice. What are some of the, I'm sure this is similar to any other competition that you might submit for with, you know, orchestral music. What are some of the things that you, are you one of the judges for?
I am. The process has, I think, changed throughout the years, depending on who the music director has been. But when I started, I asked if I would be able to be on the panel, you know, partially because I'm certainly very interested and want to be a part of who we're selecting, but also because I'm a composer and I feel like I certainly have this experience that I can draw from that will certainly, I think, help as far as the judging of these pieces goes. So I felt like not only was it appropriate for me to be on the panel, but, you know, also it was very helpful for me sort of in shaping the program to be involved in the decisions as well.
Yeah. And, you know, you're the one conducting it.
Right. And I should also add that once these composers are selected, then we then commission them to write a new piece for the orchestra. So we aren't selecting the pieces that they submit to be played. We're selecting the composers based on their submissions, and then we ask them to write a brand new piece for us. So you never quite know what you're going to get, even from the composer who submitted something that we chose.
Yeah.
With any commission, you are sort of flying blind, and we get a brand new piece. We get 3 brand new pieces every year.
Nice. When you're judging these works, what are some of the things that you're looking for? What are some of the parameters of the judging process?
Well, you know, it's always interesting because we have usually about a panel of 4 or 5 people, usually mainly composers, but, you know, every now and again, we'll bring in, you know, another instrumentalist or somebody else with a background in contemporary music or somebody just to provide a slightly different perspective. Mm-hmm. We always have a sort of an established composer as the sort of chair of the panel who doesn't necessarily make the decisions, but is kind of there to help moderate the discussion. So for the last few years, it had been Julia Wolf. She just left us, and going forward now, Chris Theofanides is going to be the chair of our panel. So, and before Julia, it was Steve Mackey. So we've had some really great composers that have sort of been in this process. But it's sort of interesting because, you know, we kind of go through, usually we'll get, you know, somewhere around 80, 90 submissions a year. And that's a lot of, you know, music to go through, you know, in depth to really make sure that we're looking at everybody in the fairest way possible. So, you know, we usually end up having everybody sort of pick after they go through it, their top 10 or so. And then we sort of, you know, listen to it together, listen to the pieces that we've selected, you know, and sort of our top pieces and sort of just discuss them and discuss what we like, what we don't, you know. And it's always very interesting to see, you know, where people are coming from. You know, different composers really do seem to value different things. And, you know, look, composition in general is a very subjective art to judge. Mm-hmm. You know, there certainly is technique to it. There are certain things we can all look at and say that's well crafted and that's not. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, it is really a taste thing. So it's always very interesting to see, you know, from year to year, who's on the panel and what they seem to really value and what they don't. You know, for me, what I'm really looking for when I am listening, you know, and looking at these works, I'm looking for two things. You know, one is really just to feel like the composer really has a voice, that they're saying something about themselves through their music. Mm-hmm. And that can be done in many different ways. It's almost kind of hard to describe sort of tangibly, but I think, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, when you're hearing it, that the composer really has something to say, and they're trying to express it in a very genuine way. Yeah. And they aren't just trying to do certain things for, you know, technique's sake or gimmick's sake, or, you know, I really want to see that they're, you know what I'm talking about. I think we all do. You know, we just want to see that they really are using, you know, the music to say something, no matter what that something is. And then the second thing is more of a technical aspect for me. You know, I do like to see that the composer really has a good firm grasp on just, you know, the real fundamentals, just structure and form and orchestration. And, you know, those are the kind of things you can kind of judge a little bit more objectively. And you can really tell when a composer knows what he's doing, has learned, has studied, you know, the appropriate sort of pieces and texts and that kind of thing, and really does have a firm grasp on how to write, you know, fundamentally well. And so I would say those are the biggest things that I'm looking for. I mean, it isn't necessarily a, you know, I like this kind of music or that kind of music or don't, you know, I think if your music really is well written and has a voice, that comes across no matter, you know, what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I would imagine what a kind of a hobby horse of mine sometimes is orchestration, and, you know, I'm still a relatively young composer. I'm a composer. So I'm still fairly young.
Still very young. I'm a conductor. How do you think I feel? I'll still be a young conductor at 55.
Yeah. One thing that I, you know, on Facebook and, you know, wherever else we happen to congregate, the question of orchestration and, just when it comes to writing for, you know, not just like, you know, instrumentation for a chamber piece, but writing for the orchestra and how you go about your orchestration. One of my things, you know, is walk before you run and crawl before you walk. And I think it's easy for young composers to try to go at a dead sprint in terms of orchestra.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I think that's a big problem that we have now. And you know, especially, you know, it's interesting because, you know, oftentimes, you know, again, why this program of the Youth Symphony is so great is that there are, you know, it's very hard as a young composer to get an opportunity to have an orchestral piece played, let alone rehearsed well and then premiered in Carnegie Hall. I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't have a lot of experience doing it before they get, you know, to this point. And the one thing that, you know, you often see with a lot of young composers is that they get a chance to write for a big orchestra and they feel like they really need to use it and use it all the time. and you know, I think my biggest criticism, not necessarily of the pieces that all the pieces that I've seen come through the Youth Symphony, but, you know, one thing I do often see with a lot of younger composers writing orchestra pieces is that they really just, there's just always too much going on. You know, they feel like because they have so many instruments at their disposal, they have to use them all as often as they can. And there's so often 7 or 8 different things happening at one time. And it's just so, it's so complicated and so muddled that you really can't disseminate what's happening at all. Yeah. So I would sort of echo your sentiment in that, you know, it's not necessarily advantageous to, you know, try and, just because you have this large orchestra at your disposal doesn't mean you have to be using so many of the instruments, doing so many different things all at once. And I think, you know, that's where, if you really go back and study the great masters of the past, that were, you know, when you look at the Wagnerian orchestra or the Strauss orchestra or even Schoenberg, you know, they're writing for these large ensembles. But if you look at how the orchestra is used, it's not as if everybody's always playing at once. And certainly, you know, they're not always playing different things all at the same time.
Yeah.
I actually think Rite of Spring is a great example of that. If you really go look at how Stravinsky orchestrates, it's a large orchestra, but you know, there's only so many things actually really happening at one given time. And very often it's being used throughout the ensemble, and many instruments are playing a fragment of these ideas, but it's very logically constructed. And I think, you know, I would encourage young composers to, of course, I'm sure they all do, but really to study these, how these guys use these orchestras, because it's not nearly as convoluted as it may appear at times.
I remember my first attempts at writing for the orchestra.
And, you know, for me, it's interesting because, you know, my background is so different in that I had been really always working with orchestra music ever since I was very young. That's what I was drawn to. That's why I wanted to be a conductor when I was so young. So for me, writing for the orchestra was always, I found, easier than writing for a smaller chamber ensemble, because I just had a better, I just grew up with that sort of sound and that, you know, I've been looking at these scores my entire life. I just sort of had such a better sense of how to write well for an orchestra than, say, a wind quintet. That was much more difficult for me. So it's interesting for, you know, usually I think it is the other way around, where, you know, figuring out how to use an orchestra well is, you know, a difficult skill.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of experience and practice and study to figure out.
Yeah. My first attempts I basically tried to use the orchestra as a humongous chamber ensemble.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Thinking that every instrument needs it's doing, if not something all at the same time, then, you know, I have to think about the flutes as, okay, I have three at my disposal for this thing that I'm writing. So I have to write three different things. And
right. It doesn't work that well. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't till later, really, till I was in grad school, that David Del Tredici kind of smacked me on the head and said, no, they're family.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, Bruckner's a good example for wind writing. If you go see how he uses his woodwinds, they're playing in unison so often, because as one family, as one voice, that actually, you know, when you use the brass the way he uses the brass, for the woodwinds to actually come through, you know, they need to all be playing together often for that, whatever they're playing, for that voice to be heard and that texture. So I think it really is worth, you know, going back and studying the greats of the past and seeing how they really wrote for the orchestra, because they knew what they were doing. There's no question.
It seems to me, especially for composers who are starting out, like, you do get that sense of, if you're doing, like, to start, I kind of call it come to Jesus orchestration, just like straightforward kind of classical style of orchestration, you know, you're whatever it is, but using the orchestra in a very standard way, I think it makes rehearsals a lot easier, and especially with an orchestra with more experienced players, you might not burn through goodwill.
They can see right through you if you don't know what you're doing also. They spend a lot of time with the standard rep as well, and they know what good orchestral writing is and what it isn't. For sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny, I was just remembering, I obviously won't name them, but, you know, a good friend of mine a long time ago, I commissioned them to write a piece for me, and I was on a concert with Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. And I remember they said to me at some point, they're like, oh, I just want to listen to Beethoven's Seven, so I have an idea of, you know, sort of. And I was like, how could you not know that piece already? You know, I think sometimes, you know, as composers, we tend to, obviously don't look down on any of this stuff, but, you know, some of our young composers tend to look at that as music of the past. And I learn your Beethoven symphonies and your Brahms and all that stuff. I mean, these guys really knew what they were doing, and you can learn a lot about how to write well for all the ensembles.
Yeah.
by studying them. You don't need to write like they do, but but you can certainly learn a lot technically about how they handle, especially orchestral ensemble writing.
Yeah, it's amazing to look at that stuff and just see the clarity.
Yep. Incredible. It's like eating vegetables. You have to do it, even.
I know.
Do it. Yeah, it'll help.
Like, oh, vegetables. Oh.
Very beautiful vegetables, by the way.
Yeah. It also seems to me that like an orchestra is like an organism, and it works in it's used to working in a particular way. So it seems, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that maybe like an orchestra, like players in an orchestra are used to hearing other instruments sort of at the same time. Like they're doubling with, I'm playing this and I'm doubling with that, and I'm used to hearing that. And to go, not necessarily to go against it, but to not know what you're doing, or to do it in a way that's like really against all of the standards and what actually works, is disorienting.
I think there's truth to that. I mean, I think they're certainly used to certain sort of combinations, and there are certain techniques that have worked that are sort of tried and true that, that will be successful. And that isn't to say to discourage, you know, any composer from trying new combinations and new things.
Yeah.
I think that's certainly, you know, we're all sort of looking for new ways of using, you know, an ensemble like that, where there's so many different possibilities and colors to get. But, you know, I think there is a certain sort of sense that you gain sort of understanding how the orchestra works and how the collective sound really works, and how these instruments work together in certain combinations, where you'll begin to understand what, you know, may be successful and what won't, and, you know, why certain things may work and why other things may not work as well. And, there isn't any other way around that other than, you know, just experience and experimentation and you know, studying and just sort of getting a sense of what really works well, within an orchestra and what doesn't.
Yeah. There's so much like really fantastic rap, you know, in the 20th and now the 21st century that does use the orchestra in, you know, atypical ways. And
of course,
it's a huge chamber ensemble that's wonderful and very masterfully done. But you know that those composers worked at it.
Of course. And, you know, not to come back to our program, but, you know, I think another reason why the composition program we have is so great is that because we're a youth orchestra, you know, we only do 3 concerts a year, and our rehearsal process takes place once a week over 2 or 3 months. So, you know, it gives the composer, you know, a lot of time. You know, he writes the piece, we go through it. You know, we talk about certain things that I think may not work, or, you know, maybe difficult, or, and then, you know, we'll have the first rehearsal and we read through it and they'll be able to hear it. And then if he or she doesn't like something, or, you know, they have a week to go back, maybe make a couple of changes and bring it back the next week, and we can, you know, try that, you know, again. And, you know, we have that for process playing out over months. Nice. So it really does give them a really opportunity to you know, be courageous to try new things. If they don't work, we have plenty of time to try other things. To sort of, you know, kind of fine tune the piece and get it as good and as close to what, you know, the composer really was intending and, you know, originally by the performance. So it really is a good way, you know, because, you know, often these young composers don't have as much experience working with the orchestra. It gives them a chance to experiment a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, some things that they don't, you know, that they were trying don't quite work the way they wanted to. You know, it's really they have. There's really no pressure on them. They can sort of make the mistakes, and we can make the changes, and, you know, nobody even has to know. So it really is. It's a great process, a great learning process for the composers. You know, the way we do it.
Yeah, so many of us don't get the opportunity to work with orchestras, and that's like the best way to learn how to write for orchestra is to write for orchestra and hear it.
Yep, like anything. Yeah, the more you do, there's really no substitute for the experience of trying it and hearing what you've written. And you know, they all look. I mean, plenty of our great composers heard what they wrote and went back and changed things completely many, many times. So there's certainly no shame in that being part of the process.
Nice. Yeah. So when does this competition typically take place?
I believe so. Usually the deadline for submission is around the end of the calendar year. So it's usually around December. Nice. I think this year was a little bit later. It was like a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
But it's usually around the end of the year. The panel meets usually in February. And so, you know, the winners are usually notified, you know, somewhere in February and, you know, end of February, beginning of March. And they have a few months, you know, through to the fall to write the piece. And then, you know, we sort of have the rehearsal process from there on out. Mm-hmm. Sort of fine tune things as we go along. So it's a little bit of a crunch, you know, they don't have that much time. You know, usually the commission is we're talking about maybe like an 8 to 10 minute piece for orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if you don't have a ton of experience can be an undertaking.
Yeah.
But it's also, again, sort of a very good simulation of a real professional experience. And mm-hmm. given, you know, a finite amount of time and a deadline, mm-hmm. to write, you know, a relatively, involved piece. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be as a professional composer. Mm-hmm. You're going to find yourself in these sort of time crunch situations where, you don't have as much time as maybe you'd like, to write a piece, but you have to get it done. And so sort of simulating that experience as well for them, I think, you know, in many ways that's sort of, you know, a good, sort of good practice for them as well.
Yeah.
You know, sort of learning how to write on a deadline, you know, mm-hmm. going forward.
That's good professional development.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Nice. I recently did a big push for this show with colleges around the country. So you may be getting a lot more college students applying.
Oh, well, certainly hope so. That'd be great. Yeah. No, it really is a wonderful opportunity, and there are so few that I know of, at least that we know of, that, you know, really do offer young composers this opportunity to, you know, especially for an orchestra piece, to get it, you know, really rehearsed, you know, well, you know, with ample amount of time, mm-hmm. And care, and then to get a real polished performance, at the end of the process, you know, in a place like Carnegie Hall, it's, you know, doesn't happen very often. And so it's not only a great opportunity, but it's such a great rare learning experience as well.
Yeah. Nice. So it's sort of, I mean, talking about the way that you program and the nature of this particular competition, you know, commissioning initiative that you have, it sounds like this is probably the only way for the most part, let's say, for contemporary composers to kind of interface with your ensemble.
Well, we also have the Youth Symphony, and perhaps we're somewhat unique in this regard as well. You know, we are comprised of a couple of different programs. We aren't just an orchestra. We have a jazz band. We have a conducting program, a chamber program, and we also have a composition program that's separate from our sort of commissioning program. So we do have, you know, a composition program, again, ages 12 to 22, mm-hmm. Of young composers. I believe we have about 16 composers usually in a given year. I'm in the program, and that's a separate sort of thing. They meet sort of regularly, I think mm-hmm. weekly or something along those lines, and have different projects. You know, we do sort of collaborate. So at the end of the year, they have sort of a end of the year concert, and they'll write pieces for sort of a chamber orchestra or a chamber ensembles or the jazz band and that kind of thing. And our students perform them. So, you know, sort of a lot of sort of collaboration going on within the entire mm-hmm. organization. But we do also have a composition program designed for younger composers as well. So it is sort of, you know, at least, you know, and obviously that's for more local mm-hmm. students in our area than the commissioning program, the first music program. But, you know, we do try and provide as much opportunity as we can. Yeah. For composers to, you know, especially that are younger and looking to get involved and mm-hmm. go forward to school or something like that.
Nice.
And I actually believe, you'd have to ask our the director of our composition program, but I'm pretty sure for whatever reason, you know, this year we actually have more college students in the program.
Okay.
You know, from some of the, I believe from Yale and mm-hmm. You know, other schools in our area that are involved. So.
Nice.
You know, slightly more advanced level maybe than we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. You're also the assistant, an assistant conductor for the New York Philharmonic.
I am the assistant conductor at this point. There's nobody else this year. Just me. Yeah.
Nice. What is asked of you in that capacity?
You know, generally the same thing you would see as, you know, in most conductor roles, you know, throughout the country. You know, I'm generally there as a cover conductor, you know, mm-hmm. if anything happens to any of the conductors that are supposed to go on any given night, I'm there to fill in for them. And then I also do, you know, a lot of the young people's concerts that are mm-hmm. certainly very well known with the New York Philharmonic, mm-hmm. And other projects that, you know, I've been involved in the our contact series, which we have at the Philharmonic, which is sort of a contemporary music sort of series we have. It's more sort of chamber oriented mm-hmm. to do sort of different performances in different venues around the city, but it's geared towards contemporary music. And other, you know, any other projects that that might come up, a holiday concert or a movie thing or that kind of thing, usually I'll do some of those. It's interesting, and actually just recently been doing some school day concerts this week. Mm-hmm. And the Philharmonic actually has a really wonderful program called the Very Young Composers Program. Mm-hmm. They started a few years ago, and it's, they've really built it up there. It's not even just centered around New York anymore. They sort of built it. They have programs going on in Korea and China and Venezuela and Finland and sort of all over the place. And it really is geared towards trying to get, give access to as many young people that want to be, that are interested in composing as possible, you know, in many different communities in this city and in the world. And it's really wonderful. I mean, we have, you know, what we do on these school day concerts, we're actually, you know, featuring a few of the students in the program, and they actually write short 2 to 3 minute pieces for the Philharmonic, and we play them. And we're talking about, nice. You know, 10, 11 year olds who, you know, write these pieces. Huh. And, you know, we have sort of, teaching assistants that sort of help them notate the pieces, mm-hmm. but the music themselves, you know, all comes from them. Nice. So, you know, they actually get a chance to have these short little pieces played by the New York Philharmonic, which is really wonderful. And again, you know, the point is really, you know, they're trying to reach as diverse a pool of students as they possibly can. So, you know, the whole idea this year actually was to feature all the young composers who were featured on these school concerts. There's 7 of them. They're all first generation Americans. Nice. So, you know, we're talking about trying to find ways of sort of diversifying mm-hmm. sort of the pool of composers. And this has been a, you know, really wonderful way of doing that. Because I think the issue that we're all facing is that, you know, the only way to really diversify the sort of people we have, especially as composers, is to really reach them, you know, in their communities when they're younger, to get them involved mm-hmm. As soon as we can. Because, you know, often if you're trying to reach them, you know, once they're out of school and, you know, once they're young adults and adults, it's much, much harder to get them interested. But if you mm-hmm. get them going, you know, when they're young, when they're in school, it can really stick with them for a long time. So it's a wonderful program, and I'm, you know, very proud to be a part of that one as well.
Yeah, that's cool. That's great. And I like the demographics on that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, you know, it's a problem we all face. And you know, like I said, I think that the biggest problem is that there isn't an immediate solution. You know, it's a long-term,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, sort of a slow sort of process that we need to, you know, be committed to, and understand that it's going to take some years for the results to really, mm-hmm. You know, bear themselves out. But, you know, if you really start, and we see this, you know, a lot of programs, you know, a lot of the El Sistema kind of programs, we see a lot of them happening here in New York, and I'm sure, you know, all over the country, mm-hmm. That are really trying to reach these students in these communities, when they're young. And, you know, it's going to take a few years, but I think you will start seeing the results of them, you know, down the road. And we will see a much more diversified pool of musicians, classical musicians and composers, in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. I have here written in my notes, I'm wondering what your opinion is on, composers needing to know how to conduct their own works. or at least, you know, having a basic skill in the realm of conducting.
It's actually a tricky thing in that, you know, as from the conducting perspective, mm-hmm. you know, as a conductor, you need to be careful about programming your own work.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know, because it looks like you're, you know, you don't want to be trying to promote yourself too. Oh, you know, exactly. You're already on the podium. You don't need to be, you know, promoting yourself as a composer at the same time. You know, I think there probably is value for composers to experience what it's like conducting their music, because it might, in a way, give them insight just from sort of ensemble execution, you know, angles, sort of what's easy for an ensemble and a conductor and what maybe isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I think any experience like that is sort of is good for a composer. You know, I don't know how much really, you know, being able to conduct well mm-hmm. necessarily.
Yeah.
It's sort of a separate skill and a separate thing. And yeah. You know, certainly as a musician, I think there's value in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I really, for me, where I find sort of the sort of, synergy between composing and conducting more sort of, obvious is more in the sort of the score study mm-hmm. aspect of what conductors do. Mm-hmm. Because in essence, conductors and composers sort of approach the same problem from opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
In that, you know, as a composer, you're learning how to, or trying to figure out how to construct a piece of music from scratch. You know, you're starting from nothing and you're sort of building these elements, putting them together to create sort of the finished product. Yeah. And as a conductor, you're essentially taking that finished product and trying to dissect it and figure out how it was all put together. So, you know, as a conductor, it's been very helpful for me to have gone through the composing process to sort of understand, you know, what it's like to start from nothing and construct a score. Mm-hmm. Because then when I'm looking at a score by somebody else, I can kind of put on, you know, my composer's hat, so to speak, and kind of say, okay, if I were a composer, why would I have written this way? You know, mm-hmm. what maybe would I have intended by writing it? You know, it sort of gives you an insight as to really maybe what the composer's intentions based on the mm-hmm. notation you see may have been. And I think for composers, it's the same thing. I think, you know, if you really understand from a conducting standpoint how to interpret a score, you can be a lot, it'll help you be a lot clearer.
Yes.
In the way that you notate, mm-hmm. You know, you'll be able, I think, to get what you want across a lot easier. Mm-hmm. If you sort of understand from a musician's or a conductor's standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, what you would think if you were interpreting somebody else's scores, you know, mm-hmm. to say, and, you know, you see actually that if you go look at, you know, composers like, you know, Mahler or Strauss, who were conductors, mm-hmm. Who did understand sort of both ends of the spectrum, and you see how they notated things. I know the book on Mahler is that, you know, it's so detailed and it gives you so many instructions in every single note. But, you know, also a lot of the directions you see are directions that he writes in because he knows what's going to happen in the orchestra, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he says, you know, I know the orchestra is going to try and rush here, so don't rush. Those kind of instructions.
Yeah.
And it makes the conductor's life easier because mm-hmm. you have a composer who sort of understands where you're coming from mm-hmm. and is giving you instructions that's going to help you, you know, recreate exactly what they were looking for, you know, more clearly. So I think, you know, from that, I think it's more beneficial for composers to actually experience what it's like studying a score mm-hmm. From a conductor standpoint than this than it is actually conducting.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel very much the same way as a performer, as a vocalist, when I approach other people's work, you know, I feel like it's much more beneficial that I am a composer as well. And I can kind of dive into, you know, what this other person has written and understand it in a different way. And so then as a composer, I'm thinking, what is the best way to get this idea across to a singer?
Right. And I think, you know, it's just sort of, the same thing goes if, you know, obviously if you're a string player, you probably have a much better sense of how to write for, say, a string quartet, than mm-hmm. you know, perhaps a wind player or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a conductor, you may have a much better sense of how to write for an orchestra, you know, mm-hmm. so to speak, than if you have no experience with it. So, it really is the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Since we're sort of coming up on the hour here, I kind of want to hit like maybe two more little things, before we call it a day.
Sure.
So as a, you know, a conductor who, advocates for new music and tries to incorporate that into your, you know, your programming, how would you, what advice would you give composers to who want, you know, of any age who want to write more for orchestra, or who want to get, you know, existing works performed more? Is there an avenue that because it's hard, it's really hard to get
sure.
form. Is there something that can make things easier? Is there any advice you have for those of us trying to do that?
I mean, I think it all is so sort of contextual. You know, it sort of depends on your community and what's happening. And you know, I think every, you know, situation is a little bit different. You know, there isn't a surefire. You know, we had this sort of the same issue with conductors, right? Where I remember when I was in school and we'd have, you know, people come in and talk to the class, you know, established conductors that have already had their careers going. And of course, you know, all the students want to know is, how did you get your career? Like, how, you know, what do you got to do to be successful? And, you know, the answer was always, no matter what, they would come in and say, well, you know, my path was kind of unique. I didn't really do it the way other people did. I kind of got lucky here and this happened. And, you know, we're all just like, oh, great. So, you know, basically you just got to get lucky and that's out. And I think that the truth in that is that there isn't just, you know, something that everybody can just do that's going to, you know, help you get what you want necessarily. You know, the advice I would give composers is just be involved in whatever's going on in the community, you know, not just the composing aspects of it, but, you know, get to know the people that are involved in the ensembles, you know, that are around you in the orchestras or any other, you know, it is a really, even as a composer, it's such a collaborative process to have other people play your music. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of developing those relationships with performers and people and colleagues will always pay off, you know, down the road. I mean, you know, certainly I have friends of mine who are composers that I, you know, grew up with or went to school with or have met and have worked with in some level. And, you know, you're always going to be more likely to commission or, you know, work with somebody you already know and have established a relationship with than somebody you don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would just, you know, sometimes as composers, we get a little bit isolated and insulated in our own sort of, you know, community. And I would just, you know, encourage everybody to make sure that you really are, you know, branching out at least just into the musical community you're surrounded by and making sure that you are really networking with all the musicians, you know, in your, you know, in your media area and sort of, you know, wherever you can find them. You know, a lot of how the world works as far as this goes is just sort of establishing relationships and then, you know, sort of feeding off of them as you know, down the road as sort of life goes on, you know, you're going to come across the same people over and over again. And like I said, you're just much more likely to work with people that you know. So, you know, it's sort of a very, I guess, very general answer to the question, but I do think that it is really an important thing that sometimes I think as composers, we don't always think about as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that actually goes, covers the second question that I was going to ask you. So,
all right,
and that's a thing that comes up time and again in the show is establishing relationships. You know, this is so much about working with other people and getting to know them, and you know, being a part of people's lives in some way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people say at time and it becomes cliche, but you know, the musical community, especially the classical music community, is a very small world. You're going to come across, you know, the same people over and over again in different situations. People jump from job to job and position to position, and somebody who was here, you know, 10 years ago, you're going to find working somewhere else and you're going to meet them. And so, you know, it is important to establish your relationships. And you know, I guess maybe the other thing I could say, and maybe this is sort of obvious, but you know, for composers, it's just really to respect the people that you are collaborating with, and, you know, just be, always be aware that they are sort of giving you their time, and their effort and their energy to present your work. And, you know, I'm sure most composers are, but you always come across some that don't seem to really grasp that, as firmly as they should. And, you know, I think as long as you're always sort of very respectful of the people that are especially that you're collaborating with that are playing your music. You know, it really does go a long way. So,
You know, coming to things with good faith and good intentions, and you know, understanding that the other people are, you know, doing that too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important in everything that we do, but, you know, especially in situations like that.
Wonderful. So since that's just about the hour here, where can we find you and the things that you do online?
Well, you can certainly go to my website, which is just joshuagerson.com, my name, no spaces, no dots, anything like that. And you can certainly see a schedule of everything I'm doing there. You can certainly go to the New York Youth Symphony website. That's nyys.org. I will only be there through the, this is my last season as music director of the Youth Symphony. So I will be gone after the spring, but I'm still there through then. And then, of course, at the Philharmonic as well.
Nice. What's next on your agenda after the...
Well, let's see. We have, I'm finishing up our school concerts with the Philharmonic. Our next Youth Symphony concert is, we have one in the middle of February and then the beginning of March, March 5th at Carnegie Hall. I'll be bouncing around the country a little bit now and then between those things. But in New York, those are the next couple of things you can see me doing. Nice. Hopefully I'll be, the next step for me is to sort of get out there a little bit more, do some more guest conducting, in the future. So hopefully, for those of you around the country, I'll be nearer to you, hopefully, and not the too distant future.
Nice. And I'll be at the March concert.
Oh, fantastic. So, we'll make sure you come and say hi.
Say hello. The staff at the Youth Symphony was lovely and offered me tickets to that concert. So I'm like, I will.
Oh, great. Fan. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you to them.
And I will definitely thank them.
Awesome. And thank you again for being here. This has been
a pleasure.
Fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. So everybody out there in listener land, thank you for listening. Call to action again this week, the new show. I know I've been, hammering this a little bit lately, the new show, The Composer's Guide to Doing Business, twice weekly, Wednesdays and Fridays it comes out. It's available on iTunes and all the other podcasting apps out there. You can find that on the Music Publishing Podcast website. So thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you next time.